listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax. This is Topop. I'm Charlie Clausen.
I'm Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching.
And if you are listening, we'll reintroduce the hand signals that we haven't used in 2024.
Well, it was our first couple of episodes back. I don't think that we're not going to lie to anybody. We're trying to bank a few of them at the same time while we're in the same place.
Well, now that I've changed my outfit, you want to get out of the bag?
I mean, I think everyone was going to put it together from every, like, firstly, I didn't change, you just changed. And then we're in the same studio together and your hair is the, like, so you didn't shave.
I'm wearing a hat now.
Yeah, me too, actually. You know what I am, but
it's
that was
a different
mostly
day.
Mostly because I went out and grabbed some lunch.
Anyway, what's your point? We did hand signals.
Hand signals. We forgot for the first couple of episodes. You know what it's like? You're getting back into your job for the year, first couple of days in. You're still just remembering
what you used to do.
Yeah, how everything works. We've had a little break and we're back and everything's in the Everyone Relax feed. Everything's going well in our podcast universe at the moment. I think we're doing a good job. We're all excited about it at the moment.
Haven't seen too many complaints.
I haven't seen any. I'm not looking.
Yeah.
And so I'm just imagining.
See, the problem is I check the mail though. Yeah. And sometimes people send them directly. And compared to other strategic decisions we've made in the past, this one seems to be the least amount of angst. But even the people who do have a problem is more a familiarity thing as opposed to it's not like we've made things harder.
We haven't.
It's just like, I like your old stuff better than your new stuff kind of thing. Like, you know, I like, someone said to me,
it's all still available.
I like the disorganized chaos of the way you used to do things.
Yeah, no, that's charming. And there'll still be plenty of that.
Don't worry about that.
It'll just be,
we're still a couple of knuckleheads.
It'll just be all in the one place. Yeah. You can find all your disorganized chaos all in the one place. We don't have to employ living the entire ethos of disorganized chaos. Like, you know, I don't think there's nothing to be lost. Nothing has been, everything up till now still exists. Everything's canon, you know, and now it's just all the same dumb shit found in the same place.
Yeah, that's all you got to say. It's all good. It's all good. And even in a traditional TOFOP move, we started talking about something that we off-air that we paused because, like, you know what, let's get into it. I was saying how I'd been watching the Robbie Williams documentary, and it was so interesting because, like, I mean, I know who Robbie Williams is, but I didn't know how mega famous he was. Like, Jem, I was watching it with her and she's like, you didn't know that he was in Take That? And it's like, well, I knew all these things, but when you see the video of just like Beatlemania for Take That, and then even,
I don't think, like, I mean, Take That were pretty big in Australia, but I don't think they were anywhere near the level of big that, like, now you think, like, with One Direction or BTS or whatever it might be, that there is a sort of almost similar level of adoration and response to these artists, Taylor Swift or whoever it might be, all over the world.
Yeah.
And I think that Take That, we just never quite fully appreciated how big Take That were in the UK. And this was the time before it was so easy to just go on like Google or YouTube or whatever and be able to see what was happening in other countries. It was just that moment before that, as that was emerging, but it wasn't fully formed.
Well, they weren't global like the Spice Girls.
No.
Were they?
But in a different era, I think like 5 years from then or like 10 years, but maybe that trend of those sort of bands had evolved by then anyway.
Well, yeah,
we spent a lot of time talking about boy bands on this show.
But the documentary, there is, I think it's the second episode, is so he's dominated, like released two or three albums in the UK.
Yeah.
Every one of them's gone platinum. And then he goes to crack the US. And it's this real kind of rude awakening where he goes from playing like Wembley, 90,000 people, to playing like a club with 300 people. And it's none of the things that work for him in his European and UK career translate to the US? And because a lot of it is based around his persona, which is cheeky Robbie Williams.
Because he's not the most talented singer in the world. He's not the most talented dancer in the world. He's not like, he doesn't have the best songs of all time. Like, but he has enough good in all those areas, and he's an entertainer, and he's got that cheeky charm that comes with being, I'm this character, you know, it's Robbie Williams, right? He's an entertainer.
Yeah.
He has permission to just entertain you. Literally, it's no coincidence that one of his biggest songs is open invitation. Look, he said to the people of Greater Britain, let me entertain you. And they said, yes, Robbie.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, Robbie.
It is an interesting, like, you know, you try and sort of, you watch these celeb documentaries and I'm always like, what is their trauma? Like, what is the psychosis that has led them to this point in their life? They're mega famous. Like, what, you know, we were joking last week about The Rock, like what keeps driving The Rock? And watching this Robbie documentary, like he does seem to have this pattern of, like, it's hard to tell whether it's Robbie or whether it's fame that makes him like this, but it's kind of a paranoia or a distrust of, can't really get close to people, like whether it's a partner, like a girlfriend or something, or his writing partner. Eventually at some point he distrusts them. Like it's, you know, it comes back to him. Like it's got to be all about him. And I'm like, you know, and Take That, Gary Barlow was the star of Take That, and he was the chief songwriter and he was the one that everyone loved. And Robbie was kind of, you know, to the side of that.
Yeah.
And he sort of says in the documentary, I think the early part of my career was all about fuck you, Gary Barlow. Like I wanted to just to bury Gary Barlow and be the best because, you know, I was always sidelined by him. But then, you know, you get past that because obviously you're way past Gary Barlow. So who are you fuck youing now? It's always like he seems to kind of create a new enemy to
it's
fuck you.
It's the Michael Jordan thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I took that personally.
But it's interesting because it's like, so with the, so when it comes to the US, like that, that persona of, you know, I'm just this kind of cheeky chappy and self-deprecating and stuff. Like Americans don't like their stars to mock or denigrate their status. Because I think culturally for Americans, like that is a
status is aspirational.
It's a validation of your hard work. Wealth.
We've always said
fame,
that, like, yeah, it's, you don't need to be, it's not what you're famous for. Like, it's that you're famous, like that you made it, that you were a success. So that by the very nature,
even
of,
if you've inherited wealth, like, well done.
Well done.
You deserve
you
that.
Nailed that.
Something about you is exceptional.
Yeah, exactly. And there is that sense of that. That is part of the DNA of who they are as people, for good and for ill, and has driven many of the technological advancements they've made. But it's also meant that Donald Trump's probably going to be president again. Like, you know, there's some real swings and roundabouts in that approach to, you know, how you're going to like live your lives. But it's not what Robbie Williams was delivering. But also, they didn't get the backstory, right? Like,
there's one very cringy moment where he's doing a big press junket and all the American journalists are asking questions, and one of them like clearly hasn't got the memo or wasn't briefed properly and was like, oh, I love Take That, and you know, Take That wrote, you know, so many great songs. And you can just sort of see Robbie's a slight sitting there gritting his teeth, and he's like, and my favorite one is Want You Back for Good, which is the one that he's not on. Yeah. He'd already left the band by then. And it's just like, oh boy. Oh boy.
So there's that drives him. And so then people in the UK, when he becomes a solo act, that's part of a story that they've been following all their lives, right? They followed him when he was the one in the boy band who wasn't the star of the boy band. He develops to go out on his own, and then suddenly, like, I mean, I guess when, like, you know, One Direction, like, split up, there was all those moments where there was, like,
is it Harry or Zayn?
Yeah, who's it going to be? Like, and they all, there was a few of them that were, like, really, like, you know, going in their own direction, and, oh, look what they're doing now, and they're making this style of music, or they've got this sort of fashion or whatever it might be. And then just Harry Styles just reigned supreme.
I've got it.
Yeah.
Sit back. I got it here.
Yeah.
It's funny you should mention that because I don't really know anything about One Direction beyond Harry Styles and the other guy, the Zayn guy. But I did go and look up who the other members were. Mm. And they're doing fine.
Yes.
Like, they've all got like other careers and heaps of money and all this stuff going on. It's like, so you could sort of just walk away from the biggest, like a huge boy band. And the thing that you're always asking about celebs, just take a day off. Like, just relax. You don't have to worry about it anymore.
You just stop.
Just stop.
Yeah.
You've got more money you could spend in a lifetime. Yeah. Heaps of fame and adulation. Always get the best seat in a restaurant. Just relax.
Go to more restaurants. Yeah. Have a good time. You'll be fine. Yeah. It got me thinking about this idea of like Guy Sebastian and Shannon Knoll and those sort of era of performers who, particularly through Australian Idol, other shows as well, but particularly through Australian Idol, there actually ended up being this generation of, like, now when you look back on it, Rob Mills and, you know, there was M. Rusciano. There's a whole bunch of these people who came out of these shows, plus the hosts of the shows and these sort of things, who have become part of the broader cultural conversation in Australia. And you're like, oh, it wasn't just like one series of a show and we never heard those people again. Like,
it's still
around. You know, Shannon Knoll and Guy Sebastian and these sort of people are still around. And I like the rapper Lupe Fiasco, and I was listening to just like a Spotify, well, it wasn't Spotify, but like an Apple Music list that was like various things. And Battle Scars, which was the song Guy Sebastian and Lupe
Fiasco. These battle scars don't look like they're fading.
I hadn't heard that song for a long time.
Well, like 15 years.
Since it was everywhere on the radio all at once, and then just hadn't heard it again since then. And I was like, this is a great song. Like, the Guy Sebastian, like, I mean, this is just, I think, a really, really good song.
Well, just a little sidebar. So that was, when that song came out, that was back when Jem and I were making a bunch of music videos for Sony. And a lot of the time, you know, no offense to any of the artists we work with, but like, you'd get sent a brief and be like, oh, yeah, I reckon we can make this work. But that was the one song where we heard it, we're like, oh, let's make this one. Like, this is actually one that you get really excited about.
So did you make that one?
No. They gave it to a big US, because they knew what they had. So they went, and Lupe as well. So they went to the US to shoot.
Well, okay. Well, that makes sense. But it turns out that, so I must have just been, I got home and just decided, you know what, I'm going to do a little Guy Sebastian.
Deep dive.
Battle Scars deep dive. Well, I think my first curiosity was whose song it was, like whether Guy had been, like, because you never know with like a song like that where like someone's singing the hook and someone's doing the rap. It could be like the rapper forward and then they've got someone to come in and do the hook.
Yeah.
Or like, as in this case, Guy Sebastian like was involved in the writing of this song.
Including the rap?
Well, so this is where it gets really interesting. So what I found first was a react video of somebody hearing Guy Sebastian sing Battle Scars on acoustic guitar as part of an Anzac for the Troops, from home. It was like a concert from home. It must have been maybe during the pandemic.
Oh, here it is.
Wish I never touched. Wish that I could stop loving you so much. Cause I'm the only one that's trying to keep us together.
Well, produced.
This is just him in his home studio. Like playing guitar himself and singing. And so he does all the raps as singing. You know, like that, like he does the whole song.
Okay.
Just as, and it works. This kid can sing, it turns out. I don't know.
Stop the
if
press.
If anyone knows this about Guy Sebastian,
Colin can
but
sing.
It turns out he's really good at singing. Like, but it's such a beautiful version of the song, and like I watched it a whole bunch of times, and but then it just got me thinking about that idea of like this react video, this person had never heard of Guy Sebastian. And in fact, they thought he was kind of an indie artist, you know, just playing the acoustic guitar. And I realized, oh, you're just hearing this, you know, as a song.
Yeah.
Like, you've got no cultural context to, like, you don't know the story of, like, Shannon and Guy and, you know, the trials and tribulations and the fro and the, you know, we've seen him turn into, like a cool, like, he was a bit of a Christian nerd and he's become this quite kind of, like, he's like, we've followed all this and we've followed it in conjunction with the Shannon story that has run separately but, you know, also, like, been its own story. Like, and so for us, when I was watching that, I was like, oh, look at this. Like, not only am I enjoying this, like, him as an artist and like how much he's developed into this like really fantastic, incredible artist is, but that you've kind of seen the journey from when he was just a kid auditioning on a...
Guy Sebastian got changed in your house once, remember? Because we did do music videos for Guy, and one of them was shooting down near your old place in Sydney, and we used your house as a unit base. So Guy Sebastian actually got changed in your... living room.
I mean, I didn't give a shit about that at the time, but now in retrospect, now that I've watched this acoustic version of this song six times, you know what? I'm rapt about that. That's great. It's great to remember. Good memories. But, you know, that's the Robbie Williams to me. Like, I mean, take that were part of, and Britain as well, that loves a soap opera, whether it's a royal family or like, you know, an everyday, like they love that
especially
kind
pitting
of,
two people against each other. Gary, the British Blur press, versus it's Oasis, all about, Gary versus Robbie,
Yeah, so it just would have been so much of the language of their cultural context, and then you just try to drop that when it's already fully formed, when he's already Wembley Stadium, let me entertain you, Robbie Williams. And you just drop him in. You're like, oh, I don't know any of the backstory.
So how does Harry Styles, because One Direction were big globally. That's the difference.
I think
Harry
Styles
was introduced so people knew. Because
but they still also, there was no preordination that it was going to be Harry, right? He was one of the front runners.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't going to be Niall, but.
I mean, this is like. There's no way I'm an expert in this topic, but this is what I understand, right? Zayn left
this
first.
Is us going for a younger audience. We've talked about
we're in mid-30s. We'll get to BTS eventually, Blackpink. My understanding is that Zayn left first and he was kind of the bad boy.
Yeah, so Zayn could have been the one, right? And he was like, didn't he shave his head?
Well,
I think
in terms of initially Zayn had the cred.
Yeah. That's
because
right.
he was working with like credible producers and writing stuff that was a bit more edgy and getting, I mean, I guess tattoos these days is not like, you know, a indication.
But
of,
but it was in that direction. He was cool.
It was in that direction, was it, Will?
Yeah.
Or was it in another direction? Or would you say it was just the one direction?
Well, I was saying it was a slightly different direction. Like it was maybe not a full different direction, but like 1 1/4 direction.
But I think... the feeling was going to be that Zayn was going to be the credible musician and that Harry was going to be famous no matter what because he was too good looking to not
be. But that he might be famous for just being good looking.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the equivalent of that would be in pop culture. Was there someone who just kind of, like who came out of other boy bands? It's always the talented one was the best looking. Like Timberlake was the best looking NSYNC, wasn't he? And he got the best career. None really came out of Backstreet or New Kids.
I mean,
about Spice Girls.
Spice Girls.
Who's the most successful solo?
Well, Jerry went out first.
Yeah. Jerry went first.
Yeah, but there is no successful solo Spice Girl.
Like as a solo successful artist, they've all released music though, haven't they?
Yeah.
Posh hasn't, didn't she?
No, Posh hasn't.
No.
Oh, maybe she did in the early days.
I thought in the early days she might have.
Maybe in the early days, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think she doesn't do any of the reunions or any of that stuff now.
Who's the most successful
solo Spice
Girl?
Can you look that up? Who had the most, like the highest ranking? I think Jerry's It's Raining Men cover went number one.
Mel C
had a number of singles, but I don't know.
Baby Spice and Sporty Spice, they were releasing music.
I don't think Baby did any solo stuff.
Really?
Looks like Mel C.
Yeah. I would put my money on Mel C. She did that Bryan Adams duet. Baby, when I'm gone or when you're gone. Do you remember that one?
Not the way you sing it.
That's all I remember. No, I don't remember. So how many, did she have any number ones? What about Jerry Halliwell?
In terms of money.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got
It's a bit tricky in terms of money.
No, what about number singles rank and.
Singles.
Yeah. Okay. And how high they got and how many they released.
Okay, let me have a look.
So a guess. I'm going to say easily Mel C.
I mean, do you think one of them has made it to number one? The Raining Men. Is that what you were saying?
I think It's Raining Men was the biggest hit out of all the songs. Because I remember Mel B did a cover as well. She did Word Up, a cover of Word Up.
Because they were so popular that I guess the idea that their first release could get to number one, regardless of the quality of the song,
is a real possibility.
Is a possibility.
Yeah,
yeah.
But they just, I think they were the sum of their parts, rather than there was one out. You know, like there was a Gary Barlow or a Justin Timberlake. The Spice Girls, I think, were all
much like a spice rack. The individual spices.
You got your cumin, your paprika. Yeah.
Wasn't an allspice situation. It would have been great if, like Voltron, they joined together to become the allspice.
Well, Jerry actually features in the Robbie documentary because they dated for a while. I had no idea.
I didn't know that either.
And she comes across so well in this documentary. She seems so lovely and down to earth. Like, there's a lot of really candid conversations that happen on camera, like when they're in their 20s that they filmed, where she's sort of like quizzing him on, like, you know, his paranoia about stuff and his songwriting process and stuff. And she's very grounded. But then she's one of the people that he gets paranoid about, because when it sort of became known that they were dating, they got hounded by the paparazzi. And then a paparazzo ran into Robbie somewhere and said, oh yeah, Jerry's been tipping us off where you're going. She's the one, she's the mole. And Robbie says in the documentary, I don't think that was true, but at the time I believed it, and it kind of made me like not want anything to do with him. I'm like, oh man, that is massively paranoid. But it also made me wonder, like in this day and age with social media, like is paparazzi still a thing? Like, are people still buying gossip mags? Like, would you be hounded like they were hounded in, you know, 2000 or whenever it was, when they're trying to go on holiday? Like, do celebrities still get hounded like that? Because everyone's got social media now. So, you know, like, people can post their own holiday photos and you don't need to get some photographer hiding in a bush.
I don't know. Like,
when was the last time you saw a new NW or Gossip Mag on
like
rack?
A long time ago.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, it feels like that industry just disappeared.
Does it still exist? Are we just not seeing it, or is it literally like not there anymore?
But I also think celebs now post so much themselves that...
But isn't it still like then just like picked up by news feeds or whatever, yes, and reposted as their own material?
Sure.
So this is like so-and-so on bikini is still on the news site,
but
you're not buying paparazzi shots.
Yeah. Like, I think paparazzi probably aren't making the same money they used to.
Yeah, that's probably true. But then again, if the person is at, like, if you're getting a shot, does that mean that they then have to get shots that are more and more A of people who don't want to post the stuff, you know, reclusive people?
Like JD Salinger. JD Salinger's hot bikini shots. JD Salinger's post baby bond.
JD Salinger breaks silence and flaunts bikini bond.
I guess that is true actually. Yeah. I did see some paparazzi shots of Jack Nicholson, who's kind of reclusive now. He hasn't really been seen in public for a while. And like, I shouldn't laugh because it's a horrible fucking profession. And if you're a paparazzi, you're a parasite. But like, it was Jack obviously just sitting on his deck, just thinking some thoughts, but like clearly not expecting to be photographed. And like, his hair and his beard and just the general demeanor was of a man just like completely in his own.
I mean, leave him alone, right? Like,
but I'm glad I saw them, because it doesn't actually, I don't think badly of Jack Nicholson. If anything, it engendered more kind of affection from me.
So I will say something that's like, so, anyway, here it goes.
Okay. Mike, get ready to dump this. I know we're not going out live, but just get the dump button ready.
No, so I've been staying in temporary accommodation, and it's in between a whole bunch of Sydney beaches, basically. And I have been choosing to go for a swim every day, but I won't go to Bondi because I'm too scared
that someone will
get a photo of me with my shirt off. And I'm not saying that would be worth anything, but I would hate to.
You don't want to have to go through that.
I don't want to have to go through that.
And the thing is, like, everyone is a paparazzi now. Like, it would just take one person to recognize you, take the photo and post it. So, in fact, it's more dangerous than back when it was people hiding in bushes and shit.
Yeah, so, but I have found a beach where I feel safe.
You got paparazzoed once when Nicole Kidman, right?
I also got paparazzoed at the gym once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like working out just by myself.
In Australia?
Yeah. And that was in the paper.
Were like, they in the gym or were they through a window?
Through the window of the gym.
What were you doing? What exercise?
Like, I mean, I didn't, you know what? It could have looked worse. It was one of those ones where I was like, that's an invasion of my privacy, but right. Also at least the photos were okay. But yeah, I was like, but I can't imagine anyone's interested in my life anymore if they ever were, right?
Mm.
And, but like, like my body is one of those ones that they could put in the paper so people could be mean to me, you know, like that would be the only reason they'd be doing it. There's no other reason that they've got this photo and they're like, if we ran this, like we get a lot of engagement with people being mean to him about his body.
The comments are going to fucking explode.
Yeah. So the only reason that somebody would take a photo of me would be for bullying and cruelty purposes, and I would not like that.
I feel like that doesn't, I don't know. I mean, I don't, like I said, I don't read the gossip section of the paper, or no. I can't remember the last time I looked at a gossip mag. But I feel
think
like
the Daily Mail and places like that, because they have
dominated by ripped people.
Yes,
like that's what they're going for.
But people
reality
that you
stars
can mock in between the ones that
do
are
they
ripped.
Do that still?
I don't know.
All right,
I don't. I honestly don't know. Maybe I'm being prejudicial in my assumption that they already do. But maybe
I feel like I feel like your instincts are right. But the greater danger would come from your photo being circulated on social media and then potentially being picked up. Like it happened with Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
Like when he put on a few pounds in between Aquaman films or whatever, and people were like, oh, look at dead bod Jason Momoa. And it was like his dad bod is 95% people's like best bod. But there was this kind of movement to like, let's body shame. But I think it, like everyone was like, hey man, like he's up, like he's on holiday with his family. Like you don't have to do that.
I mean, but I don't want to go through any of that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I like there are some beaches that I wouldn't go to because I think the paparazzo aren't there. It's not like they've heard I'm taking my shirt off down there. They're there for, because other people go to that beach that they might want to take paparazzo photos of. But if they're there anyway and you take your shirt off, they're like, oh, well, it's not like I'm even wasting film anymore, right? I might as well get one of these shots, see if anyone wants it for mocking him purposes.
When I was doing Home and Away, there was, you know, like my experience hanging out with comedians is like the greatest insult you can level at a comedian is to accuse another comedian of stealing stuff. Oh, he steals bits or he steals bits. It's like this thing that maybe can't be proven, but it sticks if you want it to stick. It sort of works on cognitive bias. And on Home and Away, the equivalent was, oh, you know they tip off the paparazzi. That person tipped off the paparazzi. Like someone, you come to work and someone had been in the paper on that and it's like, oh, yeah, it's because they tipped them off. And it's like, you just don't know if it's true.
No.
Or
it
not,
could
but
be.
But it also
might be a complete coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's also because they're famous and a photographer just happened to be at the airport.
Yeah,
at the time.
And also if they did, so what?
Yeah.
They still wanted to take a photo of them and put it in the paper. So I don't really know what the point of this is. Why have we drawn these arbitrary lines about who's using who in this situation?
Mike, did we get an answer on the most successful Spice Girl?
Yeah. Definitely. In terms of number one.
Yes.
So we've got Mel B had one number one. I Want You Back.
Okay.
What? I don't even remember that.
That was Mel B.
Mel B.
Mel C had two number ones. Never Be the Same Again, and I Turn to You.
Oh, yeah?
I don't remember any of those.
She had a stack of songs that charted, actually.
She was the most talented, in my humble opinion.
Well, that was what people tended to say, right? That Mel C, I think, was the...
Well, she was the one who could sing. crucial in her
pop I mean, group. Was it not crucial? Clearly not crucial.
Baby Spice. Baby Spice also had a number one.
Yeah. What?
What took you so long?
So this is what you were saying before about there was
that everyone gets their baby bump.
Yeah, right. Everyone gets everyone except Posh Spice.
Oh, no.
Posh Spice had a number two.
Oh, that's appropriate, mate. A real number two, that single.
Everyone else got a number one. She got a number two. But the person with the most number ones, you're right, it's Jerry Halliwell. She had
the most
four.
Number ones.
It's Raining Men.
Fuck Me Dead.
Mi Choco Latino, Lift Me Up. And also Bag It Up.
Bag It Up?
bag up that number two of Posh and leave it on her doorstep.
No, well, hang on. Set on fire. What was the second one?
Me Chocolato. Can we play Me Chocolato? Or like, are we able to listen to any of it?
It's probably been banned from this, like, you know.
Yeah.
It feels like
one of those songs.
Me Chocolato.
I don't have no memory of this song.
Is that, what is it called?
Me Chocolato.
Me Chocolato.
I can't believe that she's the most successful. I hang on. So we're saying Mel C or Jerry
Halliwell.
Jerry is,
yeah,
four this number is Me ones. Chocolato. Me and No Lyco already.
Oh, yeah. Oh no.
Bit of cultural appropriation.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, I don't need, I don't even need to hear anymore to know I do not like that song. But that was a number one.
Yeah.
Well, that was the first, that was like the free number one, because that was in 99.
That was, yeah.
Okay, also, okay, so that yeah, was the.
Then lifts yeah. me up.
That's
bump,
one.
Yeah,
that's your number spice. One you get for being in the Spice Girls. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Bag It Up was 2000. Yeah. It's Raining Men was 2001.
Yeah, I remember that because that was all part of a whole image overhaul for her. She'd gotten into yoga and she'd gotten really, remember she got really like skinny and fit when she
that's
did
It's 2001.
Raining Men. I know, man, we're old.
So old. Oh my
like,
God.
Like there's adults. There's kids born there that are now adults and finish university.
Oh no.
I know.
Who don't even know about the Spice Girl era. They weren't alive for that. They were just there for It's Raining Men.
Osher texted me the other day, this thrash metal band that use Arnie lyrics as the lyrics of their song. So they just take like
Arnie DeFranco.
I can sense the running joke for 2024, which really, let's bag it up, can we? Me no like it, that.
I'm never going to stop saying it.
But I was saying to him, like, what is the cultural cutoff for Arnie? Like, it would be the equivalent of like our parents playing us like Black Sabbath with John Wayne quotes, you know? Like, I mean, we know who John Wayne is, but I don't know that I would necessarily like the kids now, like.
Sorry, guys.
Okay, thank you. Fucking hell. We've got
sorry, so I didn't realize Murray it was Tregoning still playing through.
Is now part of Topop. that's another cultural.
So I didn't realize it was still.
That's another cultural reference that won't make any sense to our younger listeners. But do you know what I mean? Like, do you think Arnie, if you're a 24-year-old, 25-year-old who doesn't know about the Spice Girls, do you think Arnie makes sense to you?
I think
we need to get a young person on this show and ask them a bunch of questions.
Yeah.
Can we do that? Can we get like how old's like the like,
we'll like how another, young a young person?
Well, like, I'm just trying to give another person, another like listener podcaster is probably a good idea, right? But like, who's the youngest?
Well, just like, but what age do we want to like?
20, I reckon 20. Well, okay. How do generations work in terms of years?
I don't know.
Oh, fucking hell. Let's say 20.
Seven. I thought it was seven, every 7 years.
All right. So, I'd say three generations. From okay. us.
Why
so
did you over? Years. Oh, yeah, 21?
Yeah.
You were a 21-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, so 20. No, no, I'm saying like early to mid-20s.
Early to mid-20s.
So yeah.
To come on and what? Just say, do you know who Arnold Schwarzenegger is?
We'll just ask him about the Spice Girls. Like all our cultural touchstones that we all keep coming back to, even like the rock and stuff. Mm. Like, what do they mean to you? What do they mean to us?
How do they?
Let's compare
how
cultural
do you
touchstones.
Feel yeah. about.
I think I'd be interested in that.
Yes. When you look at.
You know, Nick.
What?
Sorry, I was going to say, Nick, the social producer, is 24.
24 oh, yeah, years Nick old. Could be perfect.
Yeah, Nick could be great.
And he cuts all our videos, so he has to, because we often talk about this shit, so he's having to go and find the clips.
He has to pretend to know.
Yes, he's
you want me to call him?
He's the perfect
Can you get
person.
Him now?
Yeah, I'll give him a call.
Let's do that.
I mean, let's do that, yeah.
That I think that'd be good.
If he's available.
So what do
we
want to ask him about?
Great.
Spice Girls? Well,
yeah.
Arnie? What other
cultures? But also the things that I think that we've talked about in previous, like what, like we should ask him about when you've been looking up
stuff,
you know, stuff of these people. Do you like, what don't you remember? What don't you understand? Yeah. That sort of thing. I think.
How do we frame the question though? Like,
well, I think we just ask him. Like you know, like a normal human would, but do it. I'd just like explain to him what we're looking for and then, you know.
So are there any other ones like specifically? I think we need specific examples of like cultural touchstones from our era. Grunge, Nirvana.
Yeah, we talk about Nirvana a lot.
Are we in utero?
Yeah.
Referenced?
Yeah, that's good.
Nirvana.
Yeah.
Spice Girls, Arnie.
What about the boy band stuff though? Like, I mean, it's got to be that. That's
Because he's like totally grown up in that K-pop era.
Yes.
How old did you say Nick was?
He's
Okay. Mark's cooking. Mark's
24.
Mark's got all the pots boiling at the moment.
That's right. 24.
How did we go? Do we have any luck?
24. Yeah, I'm going to dial it. It goes straight through. I can't vet it.
Are we going to just start talking to him? Or are you?
I'll vet it, but you'll hear it. Like with.
Okay.
Why don't you do plugs now?
Will, are you on tour at the moment?
I am on tour at the moment. What you talking about, Will, followed by Will Legitimate. Now, Will Legitimate's my big stand-up tour. I'm taking it to...
This is your biggest, like, tour in years or ever?
I think, well, it's the start of the biggest one in, like, 5 years. But the intention is, without getting too far ahead of myself, is that previously when I was doing my shows, I always used to have, like, I'd do a new show every year. And I've just been sort of rethinking how we want to do more live shows around this show.
Hey, mates, Mike, we're recording.
Mike has not worked out the mute switch.
So I decided, I was like, oh, you know what? I want to be able to do everything, but to do everything, I probably need to plan it more. If I want to be doing live, you know, podcast shows, I want to be doing some other things as well. I need to be able to schedule them in. And so part of that is that I want to write a show that I can tour in Australia in 2024, and then I could tour internationally in 2025. And then in 2025, I want to do a tour of my improvised show, like, you know, and so instead of trying to juggle it all at the same time, I'm going to try to separate it out a little bit and, you know, do it as its own separate things, which is like been a really fun thing to do. So I'm hoping that it will eventually be the biggest tour that I've ever done, but at least it's the setting out on the idea that it would do that, and then we'll see what happens. But it's called Will Legitimate. It starts in Adelaide and it goes to all the festivals, and then I'll be taking it to a whole bunch of other places.
willanderson.com.au. And I think we have Nick on the line, do we?
No, he's...
Okay.
Oh, we just talked.
Right.
Try again.
No, he's not there.
This is a problem. It's a problem with this generation, I tell you. They're always on their bloody devices, always got their bloody... their answering machines answering.
Yes.
Do you know what an answering machine is? That's another thing we ask him. You know what an answering machine is?
Does he check his voice, like, messages? He probably does, because he's like...
I've got a good one to ask a young person, because it fucking infuriates me about young people.
All right.
Young people, I've noticed, is you'll text them and they never text you back.
What do you mean?
Well, you'll text them and they'll read your text and they've read it, but they just won't text you back. They don't answer their phone.
Do they need to text you back?
Well, out of courtesy, yeah.
Yeah, but courtesies.
Don't you side with the youth?
I mean, I think in this regard, I think I'm often one of those people that when a conversation, need to be involved in the conversation is done, I am happy to just stop.
Acknowledge of receipt, I think, is important. If someone is sort of saying, hey, just letting you know, plans have changed, we're meeting at 8 instead of 7, just be thumbs up or a yes or something, acknowledgement of receipt. So I don't worry that you have forgotten.
Well, but you said that they've seen it and received it and read it. You know that.
What do you mean? In a text?
Didn't you say that you've like seen that they've read their text?
Oh, no, I'm saying I'll find out afterwards, because I'll be like, oh, did you get my text? Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Why didn't you respond? Why didn't you let me know that you saw it? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's like that. It's a young person thing. They don't
okay,
like
you know what? Yeah, it could...
I'll leave it
that
a
is
message.
Not Nick. Yeah. Okay. Hi, Nick. It's Charlie and Will here from TOEFOP. Look, we had some generational questions. There's a couple of old blokes we wanted to ask you. If you could give us a call back, or call Mike back, he'll pipe you through to us. We've got some things we want to ask you.
About what it's like to be a young person.
Yeah, in relation to us being old people.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Hope you're well. So did you speak to him?
No, we set it up, and I said, oh, I'll call you back, and then he's turned his
phone off. He might be in a tunnel or something like that. This is classic young people behavior, Will, I'm telling you.
Is it?
You reach out to them, and they give you nothing. It's like the most, it's like treat them mean, keep them keen.
But doesn't it feel like your demand, like he didn't know that we were going to do this. Like, we're imposing on his time.
Well, like to say, no, don't call me that. I'm busy. Don't call me.
Yeah, but you're making a lot of assumptions about what has happened based on nothing. You've been in here the whole time. I have as much information as you have, and we don't know what Nick's up to. No. He might be
Nick,
like,
I think, is an exception. I deal with Nick quite a bit, and I think he always responds, and he's very good. I'm just talking, like, generally, I've noticed with younger people that I know.
What young people do you know?
Oh, like, you know, I was on a TV show for a number of years working with castmates who are 14, 15 years younger than me.
Yeah, okay. And you're still in communication
with them. And that's the one thing I've noticed is, like, it's a vagueness around. Uh-huh. Definitely won't answer a phone. Like, calling is for psychopaths.
Oh, yeah, but also I agree with that. Why would I ever
If I recognize the number, I'd answer it. I mean, I like texting as much as the next guy, and I understand it's a more non-confrontational form of communication.
Yes.
But, like, if someone calls, answer the fucking phone. There's reason.
No. I'm not going to answer.
Really? Even if it's my number?
No. I mean,
I've so rarely called you. There are, yes.
No, that's what I would say. Is there are people that if they call me within my, like, immediate circle, I would think there is a chance there is something's gone wrong.
Someone or something is dead.
Yeah. So, yes. No, I think I would answer in regard to that. Yes.
Okay. All right. Look, I think we're going to have to move on from Nick unless he calls us back.
That's all right. Well, we can do it another time, though.
Yeah,
we can schedule this. This is a good bit of sizzle.
I mean, I kind of
think this is a good tease. We can come up with a list. We don't need to do it.
Yeah, that's a good
today.
Idea. Actually,
we'll actually come up with a list of things, and maybe we can even, we'll come up with a list of things. We'll,
cultural touchstones.
Yes.
What do they mean to you, young person?
And then we'll run it
as
by
the spokesperson of young people.
Yeah. And they've got to be things that we kind of like talk about so that we can get a sense of how relevant the conversations we're having with each other are for, like, how do we connect it with the younger generation? Like, how can they, like, what's their take on The Rock?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, okay. Think about it like this, right? So, I've got friends who are in their sort of mid-30s or early mid-30s, which means they were born when Nevermind came out.
Yeah.
So the equivalent for me would be like, I don't know, like Queen or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? So growing up, Queen to me felt like an old, even as in the 80s, Queen felt like an old person band, like a legacy act. So does that mean for those 30-year-olds, Nirvana are a legacy act? Because I still see Nirvana as being kind of like vibrant and dangerous. And
No, you're wrong.
I'm wrong?
I think so.
What's edgier than in rock music than grunge now?
Like, I mean, hip hop.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But different genre. I said in rock.
Heavy metal. Like, you know.
I mean, I'm sure there is a kind of genre of music I don't even know about as well.
Yeah. Lots of genres of music that we're not aware of, I imagine.
All right. I said this is going to be a mailbag episode, but we've completely fucked it.
No, that's okay.
We'll just do as many as we can. Thank you, everyone who writes into us. And you can contact us by going to everyonerelax.co, and there is a contact form on that site. Whatever podcast in the Everyone Relax feed you want to contact us on, you can just find it there and you can send it to the relevant pod. This is from Adam. Boys, what can I say?
Imagine if that was it. That would be a great message. Boys, what can I say? And they just moved on.
I love the show. I often find myself listening back to episodes so I can get my daily fix of Will and Charlie. And with that said, I've definitely found my favorite episode, number 487, The Hermit. Especially the start of the ep where you guys riff over asshole versus arsehole, where you got a double dose of that when we did our live show in Melbourne.
It's true.
And how Aussies love an affectionate curse word. But I've pondered over an excellent guerrilla marketing tactic for the Tofop brand. Later in the episode, you discussed the idea of Will being a hermit and living in a hovel on Mike Cannon-Brooks' property, which led to a fantastic artwork for the episode where Foz depicted Will as a garden gnome. Now, my pitch is that we design and distribute 3D files of Will as a garden gnome holding a Tofop sign, allowing people to, spreading the word and branding through the ever-growing Tofop army. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
So suggesting that there's like, we release like
garden gnomes, Will themed garden gnomes.
Yeah, but we're not making them. We're just releasing the AI designs.
So
is that what we're doing? And then people can do their own.
Yeah. We're not. This is non for profit.
Yeah,
I'm assuming here, like most Tofop endeavors.
No, but I like this idea that there could be some sort of central plan, like OpenAI style, that we just release out there and then people can be making their own. But there should be Will and Charlie gnomes that they should be able to print out. But if people started 3D printing.
I wonder if I could be like something different though, because you sort of own the hermit thing, because that was the
true.
The
that
episode.
Is true. That is actually
but
true.
But like there's other, like Iona has a fairy garden, for instance. So maybe it could be me sitting on a toadstool or something like that. Like me and Mike the Third. Mike the Third, like behind the desk.
Oh, yeah.
On a toadstool.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I don't know, what's my shtick? Listening to Five or something like that.
You're like a, yeah, but in that world, it's not like listening to Five. In that world, you're like a, like if we're talking fairies at the bottom of the garden is kind of the vibe we're talking about, right? Like garden gnomes, magical fairies, that's that sort of vibe. Yeah. You're like,
An elf of some kind. Playing like, there's always like a toad playing a fiddle.
Yeah.
So it's a Charlie.
You're a toad. You are a fiddle toad. That's exactly what you are.
P.S. As a dental prosthetist, I guess.
Sure.
I love to tell my clients they keep me laughing so I can keep you smiling. We like to alliterate with the love and living thing.
New era.
Okay, new era. Just whatever you want. Okay, this is from Marty. Please don't read out my last name. Actually, okay. Mike the Third, this concerns you as well. So listen up and feel free to respond.
Okay.
To Colin Fopp, in true Tofop fashion, I shared a joint with my mate right before the Sydney show, only to be accosted by Mike the Third shoving a microphone into my face just as the high was kicking in and as I'm walking through the door.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, I was taken fairly off guard when I shouted, "Your podcast, Mike." He corrected me by saying he was one of the podcast mics. Do you remember this?
I do remember this, yeah. This is a common mistake.
Oh, really?
Working in podcasting and radio, it's like, this is how I think of it. American stamps, they don't put like .us on the websites, or the postage stamps don't say America because they were the first. I'm like that. I don't have to say podcast Mike. I'm just Mike who works in podcasting. But now the brand podcast Mike, I've got a, you know, you can see the issue.
I'm sorry about that. That's Sam Kavanagh's fault. I'm sorry about that. This was my second joint in 3 months. So by now the social nerves are kicking in and I'm starting to doubt the idea of having the joint before the show. I was getting really paranoid.
That's not what you should be doubting. You should be doubting your lack of commitment to having regular joints so that you don't freak out.
Toughen up, mate. Yeah. Stop bloody warning. I was then sprung by the following questions. Didn't know what to say in front of the mic and... Well, hang on. Didn't know in front.
Use your words.
Didn't
Charlie.
Know what to say in front of the mic and himself well enough to stay quiet when someone put a mic in his face. I think he's talking about his friend. Okay, so there must have been misspelling there.
Okay.
It was also a relative. He's talking about his mate. My mate was also a relative Tofop virgin, and he heard a few episodes a long time ago, but now seems hooked. Although Gareth was giving him the most laughs. Okay, that's an unnecessary detail to add on the end. I mean, how can you quantify which one of us three on stage is giving the most laughs?
From the one they were laughing at the most?
I mean, but can you really qualify that? Like, isn't it like...
I mean, if you have to be scientific, have a good stab at it from the laughter.
But is out loud laughs the best kind of laughs?
Yes. Yes.
I prefer a real thinker.
Yeah, no. You say whatever you need to say to yourself.
Thanks for all the laughs.
Yeah, all good thinkers.
Looking forward to another 500 shows. Also, I'm a born and bred Tasmanian who has lived in Sydney for 8+ years, and I'm back in Tassie now. It feels so good to get in touch. Oh, no, so feel free to get in touch for any Tasmania-related questions. What do you think about the Labor government trying to stall the building of this new stadium?
We're both mainland AFL fans who are like, just bloody build the bloody stadium.
We want to put it in Tassie. I'll come over.
I'll come.
Stadium.
Yeah, if you spend so much of your budget on
you can't look after your homeless or
but I'll come over for a weekend.
This is one of my absolute favorites, and we'll finish. Oh, no, hang on, we can't finish in this one. Oh, can we?
How long have we got? 15 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, I reckon we can dig into this one because it's pretty funny. This is from Jem. Hey guys, long-time listener of the show and one of the many doctors you two have obviously played a pivotal role in getting through med school. I thought I'd write in because I think you'd enjoy hearing about my medical TOEFOP crossover experience earlier this year. I was working in ED.
Emergency department.
And examining a patient.
Erectile dysfunction.
Enormous dong. I was working in ED and examining a patient when I came across a cartoon version of you two tattooed on his leg. I've never heard of that in 14 years of doing this show. I've seen it. There was one guy got a TOEFOP tattoo. Remember that? It's in a bat symbol. Back when we used to talk about Batman all the time.
A couple over the journey.
You?
Yeah, maybe even more than a couple, I reckon.
TOEFOP logos or depictions of
your various, bits of James Fosdick TOEFOP. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. No one's ever sent me one.
No, I don't think I've only ever seen them in person, post a show or whatever when someone will come and show me.
Okay. As you can imagine, quick rapport building in medicine is important. So I thought I'd struck gold when I came across an obvious common interest. Mm-hmm. I turned to him and confirmed that it was a TOEFOP tattoo before going on to smirk at him and say, well, as you know, they've kept me laughing so I can keep you living.
I mean, good gear.
Great
good
stuff.
Material really to good. Someone who you would think
loves TOEFOP.
Well, loves TOEFOP. They've got a TOEFOP tattoo.
I thought this unexpected inside joke would definitely land, but this guy was either not as big a TOEFOP fan as his tattoo might suggest, or more realistically, was sick with COVID, as it turns out, and was now probably questioning the legitimacy of his doctor knowing that he spent his time listening to the nonsensical comedy conversation between two old mates rather than dedicating his time towards study. Now, this is something that you have brought up in the past. I love that we have such a big medical community listening to the show.
Absolutely love it.
B, would never want to get
would
treated
absolutely
by these
would not
doctors.
Want my doctor to be listening to this podcast. If I went in for some major surgery and they said, I've just been listening to TOEFOP, I'd be like, I want a second opinion.
But that's crazy, right? That, like, let's take this encounter
on face value.
On face value, thank you. I couldn't think of what I was to say. Now, someone who has this tattoo, like, to not acknowledge or...
Yeah, but if they're sick...
Yeah.
So...
You know, okay, so like they've got breathing difficulties, whatever, COVID.
They're thinking about dying. They're maybe like,
oh, you think it's that bad? I guess he's in a more emergency.
Right? Emergency department.
Yeah, you're right. So maybe Jem's the problem here.
Like, it's probably not the time for japes, you know what I mean? Like, it just might be.
I guess too. Yeah. I didn't consider that.
Because it's living.
Because, yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, you are.
Joking about someone's life. But wouldn't that all, but is there not a sense, like I remember when Kevin Smith talked about his triple bypass or the heart surgery he had, and the doctor kind of said to him, oh, we call this the Widowmaker because it has like a 80% fatality when people have this blockage, but, you know, don't worry, I'm going to take care of you. And that made him feel good. Is there not a level of
minimum expectation that your doctor would take care of you to the best of their capacity
in
that
situation
regardless?
But if your doctor is being so relaxed as to be like, hey, you know, we both like the same podcast, don't we think that like it might be disarming for you as a patient?
I assume that the doctor would treat every situation in exactly the same way. Like, I don't think there's like, you know, the doctor's like, oh, you know what? I'll try hard today to actually save this guy's life.
No. I don't think it's about the trying hard. I think it's more putting the patient at ease. And if anything, it's almost like, you know, in Fight Club, when other guys who have been in Fight Club, because they start noticing, oh, your waiter's got a black eye, and you're like, oh, yeah, you get it. Like, it's like we're part of a secret clique. I'll give you the real soup.
Yeah, but, like, there are better things than what we do. Like,
doesn't matter. Not in this situation. They're both TOEFOP fans. Our community, the TOEFOP, the teabag, is take care of each other. And that's what Jem was trying to express to this guy. It was like, hey, don't worry, man. Got your back.
Yeah, I'll give you the good medicine.
I'll give you the real medicine. Here's it. I'll give you the inside scoop. Yeah, pandemic, more like scamdemic. Let me give you the vaccines that we really developed. The one that Bill Gates handed out to all us doctors in secret at the Virgin Blood Orgy.
It's okay. We'll get you the adrenochrome. It's out the back.
Okay.
Oh, man.
He gave me a low energy sympathetic. Yeah. Okay. And when I suggested he should write to you guys about this classic real life medical TOEFOP crossover, he was pretty unenthused. Yeah. And this happened almost a year ago, so I've now given up hope that he enjoyed this clearly underwhelming interaction.
So Jem
waited, expecting there's going to be a letter.
He would tell us about it.
Yeah.
When Jem could have told us this the entire time.
But I'm on Jem's side. I think that Jem is in the right here. Like, it's kind of like, you know, doctor-patient confidentiality.
Oh, the doctor can't
talk about like someone having COVID.
Well, but apparently it wears off after a year.
Well, I think this is where the TOEFOP element comes into it. It's like, are you more teabagger? Are you more one of the normies? And I'd say that Jem is like more teabaggy. And I am like, I'm pretty upset with this tattooed teabagger for not putting their fears aside and trusting that another teabagger has got your back.
I think if I were in that situation, like, I was like, oh, you've got a Radiohead tattoo. Like, you know, I like Radiohead too. I'm not sure. I'm just like, yeah, another time for
it's
that.
Different.
Is it?
That's different. Radiohead are a hugely popular band with, like, you know, anyone could be a Radiohead fan. The teabag community are a very specific community.
Yes.
And you know them. And
no, that's what worries me. Like, if I'm in that situation.
So I think you view our audience like different to me. I'm always like, oh, no, this is cool. Like,
so you think we have actually, because maybe this is it, that I'm not quite comfortable with the idea, because it's so funny. When I do my crowd work shows, like, part of the problem I run into, and this is a very, like, you know, first world problem, you know, which is that a lot of my audience do quite impressive things. Yeah, so right. Like, often crowd work, it's very hard to make
jokes
about what people are doing, where they're like, I'm an aid worker who's like bringing vaccines to other countries. And in the meantime, I run ultra marathon, you know.
The real vaccines.
Yeah, the good ones. Yeah. And I think that this like meme of like medical professionals listening to this show started as a joke. Like, we were joking, like it just seemed like, but it's what we thought started as a joke, and we were actually doing it tongue in cheek, saying we were the number one medical podcast, seems to have had this like forward momentum of becoming a reality.
Come out of the woodwork.
Yeah. Because we have so many like medical related people who listen to this podcast, and it's like, we've just stumbled onto something for like, there's been no intention for this podcast to in any way resonate with. And so, yes, I do think in a way that I have overlooked the fact that if you get a TOEFOP tattoo, maybe this is actually what we need to start saying to people, is that it is,
it's like
that
it does those, become a medical secret bracelet. Yeah. Forget garden gnomes, TOEFOP medical bracelets.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
That is great marketing. I think that's really cool. We'll run a poll. Mm-hmm. If people want TOEFOP medical, I mean, can we legally do that? Or is it like, is that considered like?
Well, they're just bracelets.
They're just bracelets. End of the day. Medical bracelets don't have any
special powers.
Thank you for clarifying that to me. I'm all for, like, I'm crazy merch, and I think if we want to do TOEFOP medical bracelets, I think that'd be, and that means, though, if you are a doctor or a nurse or somebody who works in the health community, you got to take extra care. If someone comes in and they've got the TOEFOP medical bracelet, the real vaccines. Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for your content over the years. You've kept me laughing so I can keep others living and overall unimpressed at my passes at comedy in the emergency department. P.S. I'm also a Two Guys, One Cup listener and would love to hear some more cunt fiction. Do you want to explain what that is to anyone who might be new to?
Ben Cunnington was the former star of the North Melbourne Football Club, hard man from the farm strength.
Country boy.
Had a hair transplant.
At the age of 27.
And then fought testicular cancer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And anyway.
A real meat and potatoes, no-nonsense kind of guy.
Yeah, and he's gone back to the farm with the family, and then there was Nat Fyfe. Two-time Brownlow medalist, helicopter flying.
Investments everywhere.
And we, like, essentially just created two completely different people to them based on what we imagined they would be like and then made them into fan fiction. It's been a while. That's been years.
Yeah,
since
a couple
that.
Of years. Jem is a real, like, hardcore teabagger.
Well, everything is back in this feed now. So you will be, if you've never sampled Two Guys, One Cup or any of our other shows, then give them a listen and see, yeah, if you like this, you might also like that. Sometimes, as you can tell from that conversation there, you don't need to know a lot about AFL football to cover the nonsense we're talking
well,
about.
Well, Jem continues, I've also found myself referring to Kane Corns only as the twerp. And my non-listener friends have joined in, even without questioning the origin of this, which I think reflects the accuracy of the nickname. So good stuff from putting together the new Everyone Relax platform. I can really tell the hierarchy of power in the podcast universe is about to change. And that's a great letter to finish on. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back again next week. But for now, I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson.
Listener.